Dick Schofield Sr. Interview Part 2 of 3.
Chris Short with the Phillies was, I couldn't hit him with a handful of bats. I mean, he was, I don't know why he didn't win 30 games a year. I mean, he was just, he was tough. I mean, to me, he was really tough. Now, Philadelphia had some tough pitchers. They had some guys that could throw hard. I mean, they had Farrell and Jack Sanford and guys like that. I mean, Robert is from Springfield.
Oh, is he? He from Springfield? Oh, okay. So did you got to know him pretty well, I would imagine.
Well, yeah, I knew him, but he was gone. He wasn't even around here. So I didn't really know him or anything, but as soon as we got to the big leagues, he came over, introduced himself, and talked to me for a while. So I would talk to him all the time when we play against him or something.
Yeah.
So yeah, he come to town a couple times, playing golf tournaments I had, and I would say I got to know him a little bit, but not well. And see, Al Barlick is from Springfield. He was an umpire for a long time.
Yeah, very well known. Yeah.
Yeah, I knew him all my life. There's been a few guys from Springfield, you know, get to the big leagues. So, baseball used to be real good here. I mean, they used to have a lot of leagues and a lot of kids played and all that.
Yeah. So, when you got to Pittsburgh, there was just a whole bunch of different guys that you some of them you were reunited with, but I wanted to know if you have any recollections of people like Elroy Face, Bob Friend, Vern Law, Gene Baker,
well,
Dick Groat, Bill Mazeroski.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that. That group you're talking about, Bob Friend was a friendly guy. I like Bob Friend. And Gene Baker, he was with the Cubs, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew him from playing against him in the National League with the Cubs. So we were kind of talking to each other quite a bit, I'd say. Mazeroski, he's just a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no matter, I think he would treat everybody good. So we never had, I mean, the only thing we talked about was baseball and you know, stuff like that. We never had any kind of argument about things. And, of course, Bill Burton was at Pittsburgh, so I played with him with the Cardinals, mm-hmm. and played with him in Cuba.
Yeah.
So that was somebody that, you know, I knew fairly good. So, there was, you know, you get to know everybody pretty good. It don't take long.
Yeah.
And most of the guys were, you know, most of those guys are good guys. And then the next year, I mean, it started to, you know, you could see that team was getting better. And we played better too, and then the following year it was, that was the year that it all come together.
Well, all the pieces then, came together. You were, I think you were a key part of that. And then they traded for, there was a big trade when Frank Thomas went to Cincinnati, and they got Harvey Haddix and Don Hoke and Smokey Burgess, and it seemed like that was the. That's the missing pieces then for that.
Oh, that was, I don't know who made that trade, but that was a great trade. The Smokey Burgess could hit.
Oh, yeah.
And he could flat hit. And Hoke, Don Hoke was, he was a different kind of cat. He just, I don't know where he come from sometimes. I think he came from a different planet, but he was a good player.
Sure, he was pretty fiery, wasn't he? He was.
That year in 1960, he played really well, and Clemente played really well, and of course Grote played well at shortstop. But I'm just in my own mind. I just know that it was a team, you can't say that too many times because you got two or three guys that just dominate, you know, the team maybe, but we had those three guys. I mean, they all had fantastic years.
Well, it didn't seem like any one player really. There was no single player that dominated. It was like everybody was contributing. I mean, it seemed like timely clutch hitting and good pitching.
Yeah, well, see, then Law hurt his ankle or something like that, and then he hurt his arm the following year.
Yeah.
And the following year, it was just like, I don't know what it was, but we were no good.
Yeah.
I mean, same team was no good.
Yeah.
And Mizell just, he couldn't get nobody out. I mean, it just was like, they traded him to the Mets in a heartbeat, I think. And our pitching just went south. I mean, it was weird how that team kind of fell apart. And then I think the following year, I think we played pretty good. Mm-hmm. Looked like we might, you know, have the same team, but we never had the pitcher again.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it. But I don't know. It's a strange game.
It is, and totally unexpected, and that's the beauty of baseball, I think, is you never know what's going to happen.
And, never.
Never. I mean... You know, look at all the predictions that have, you know, been wrong on various things. But, you know, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. The end of the 62 season, Joe Brown, he basically rebuilt that whole infield, and you became a starter, and you became the leadoff man, and it seemed like they started to pull together a pretty good team again. Think so, getting rid of, you know, Don Hoke and Dick Grote. And
we had I let off, Vernon hits second. Then we had Clemente, Stargell, Clint Denon, Mazeroski, Bob Skinner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we still had Smokey, and we started out, I think, about 13-5,
mm-hmm.
and we looked like we was going to just, you know, play really good, but all of a sudden we didn't have no pitching.
Yeah.
I mean, we just didn't have the pitching.
Well, the staff was getting old at that time too. You know, Bob Friend had been around a long time, and Vern Law had arm trouble.
Yeah, he was having arm trouble. When you asked me about Elroy Face earlier, I didn't even respond. But Elroy was Elroy. I mean, he just, you ring the phone, the bullpen, hand him the ball, he'd throw it as hard as he could about 7 or 8 times, and he said, "I'm ready." So he'd come in, he'd pitch any time. So that 1 year he won 19-1. Next year when we won the pennant, he was 12-5.
Mm-hmm.
He had a better year 12-5 than he did 19-1.
Yeah.
So, but
you talked about 1959. Were you playing during Harvey Haddock's, the 12th perfect?
Yeah, I played that game. Yeah, I played, and in fact, I got 3 hits in that game. Never come close to scoring a run. That was probably the greatest game ever pitched.
Yeah.
Haddocks. I mean, 12 perfect innings, and yeah, that was pretty exciting game. That was something that nobody's ever done that. So that's pretty exciting. Yeah.
Boy, I couldn't imagine being an infield. You know, once you get into the 9th and 10th and 11th innings, and awful nervous.
I made a couple pretty good plays in that game, and I made one that I didn't think it was that good. But Bill Verdon, when he talks about that game, he mentions that play I made, and I don't remember it being that good. But I guess maybe it was the way the ball bounced or something. It kind of, you know, but there was not many balls hit hard. Only, I think Johnny Logan hit a line drive on one hop to me. That was right at me, more or less.
Yeah.
And I think Del Corando hit a line drive in the left center that Verdon ran and made for him an ordinary play, because he could play the outfield.
Yeah.
So there was never a ball hit until Adcock hit the home run.
Yeah.
But it was
And it was something disallowed. Different. Hank Aaron didn't touch second, or wasn't it something?
Yeah, boy, when Aaron come to second, then he ran back. He just turned and ran to the dugout. So he was out for going out of the base path. And then Adcock was out because he passed him on the bases when he ran around second base. So he was credited with a single.
Wow. So what a game.
They beat us 1-0, basically. So
And Lou Burdette, he pitched a good game, too.
Oh, that's what Lou Burdette called Haddocks in the clubhouse and said, "Harvey, you got to scatter those hits better." Lou Burdette was a character.
Yeah.
I went to some old timers games, and he was a funny man. He was a good pitcher.
Yeah, and you know, one of my favorite pitchers of all time was Warren Spahn. You mentioned him before.
Yeah.
You managed to get a few hits off of him, so he was one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, again, you talk about certain guys like Drysdale. I used to always like to hit against Drysdale, and Spahn. I mean, he didn't seem like he. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he got everybody out. But, I mean, for some reason, I don't know how he got everybody out. I mean, that was just how I felt. I mean, I wasn't going to tell anybody that. I mean, that. Well, he's easy to hit, but. No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I can say it now because we don't have to worry about it. But no, I mean, it's weird. And then there's other guys that Larry Jackson was another guy. I played with him with the Cardinals. He went to the Phillies, different places. And I remember one night I got two doubles off of him. And he turned around and he said, "Are you going to get a hit every time up?" I said, we called him Cocky anyhow. I said, "Cocky, I'm about 2 for 50 off of you, so don't just turn around and leave me alone." But it's just weird how, you know, I mean, it to be a great hitter, I mean, they got to see the ball better. There's got to be something that they do that, because physically there's not much difference in one guy and the other guy. So you think that strength wise that has nothing to do with this, or you know, but one guy he hits the ball and the other guy, you know, he's striking out and he's hitting 230 and the other guy's hitting 330. So it's if you figure it out, you make a whole lot of money. I mean, I'm telling you, it's. Well, they play different now than when I play. They play different. Everybody, the ball's different. I mean, my son even would tell me that he said, you know, the ball, some of these balls they're like golf balls. I mean, and
they're constructed differently. Do you mean that
they're wound tighter.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember hearing interviews. During the World War II, they had a ball that was almost dead, and they said no matter how hard you hit it, you couldn't hit it out. You know. And,
yeah.
And they've been changing. They change the balls all the time.
Yeah. See, they used to be. You never seen guys hit home runs in center field.
Mm-hmm.
You just didn't see that.
No.
And then now they hit the ball over the center field fence. I mean, it's no big deal. Everybody in the lineup can hit the ball over the center field fence.
Yeah.
So
the game changed a lot.
Yeah, well, I think I watched the Cubs play today. And last year, I think it said there was like 1,000 more strikeouts than there were hits.
Yeah. Wow.
So.
Wow.
So, you know, guys will strike out three times in a game and just don't faze them.
Mm-hmm.
They come out the next day and they still got that. They're still trying to launch that ball up in the air. They might hit a couple home runs the next day. And, you know, that's just the way they play the game. So it's mm-hmm. it's different. Yeah, I don't know. Well, the guys are bigger and stronger. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just those guys. You don't find. I mean, you have a hard time finding a guy under 6 foot.
Yeah.
I mean, if you do, he's kind of a. I mean, he's definitely different. I mean,
Altuve, he's what 5'6".
Well, yeah, but that. I mean, you can't find another guy like that in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it used to be that there was quite a few guys that would be smaller. And,
oh, sure.
But that just don't happen anymore.
Do you remember Bobby Chance?
Oh, yeah. I played with him a little bit at Pittsburgh.
Yeah, yeah. He was he was a small man, but yeah, boy, he was great.
Oh, he was great. He was a great pitcher. And he was really a nice guy.
Yes, and great fielder.
He was just a good guy. I mean, he was only around a short time, but he's what you call just a peach of a guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't he just pass away?
Not that I know of. I don't believe.
Mentioned
Joe Cunningham earlier. He passed away a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
And, boy, this past year, oh, man, there were so many. You know, there was a video I saw a couple of days ago, and it was you were talking about you were on the video and talking about Bob Gibson. And I was going to ask you about him a little later, but, you know, it was just we lost so many great ball players in this past year.
Yeah, Gibson was – I played with him twice, and I played against him most of the time, and he was just good, and he challenged everybody, and he was a great athlete.
Was he similar to Don Drysdale as far as you know that the fierce competitor?
I don't think anybody was a bigger competitor than Gibson. You got to give him credit. I mean, he went out there and he went out there to beat you, and he went out there to beat you bad if he could. I mean, that's the way he was. I liked him. I mean, I liked him, but most guys, there was guys that played against him, and they would say he hit a line drive right through the middle, hit him with it. I mean, they didn't like him at all. Now I could see why they didn't like him, but when I played with him as a teammate, I mean, you know, he would do exactly what he wanted to do, kind of, and sometimes you might not like it, but that was him. Mm-hmm. He was going to do it again. I mean, so, mm-hmm. but I liked him as a teammate.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, he was very impressive. I wanted to get back to 1960 again. You know, the time in September when Dick Groat got his wrist broken, and you stepped in. I just wanted to. I know you had a fantastic September. I think you were pivotal. You kept that club in the game, and I think you hit 400 or something that month. And,
yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, what was it? How did it all come together for you at that time?
I don't know. I wish I did. it just seemed like that. You know, it happened. Well, it happened so quick that night. And in fact, I always remember. They had lime soda pop in the clubhouse, and I'd worked out pretty hard before the game, and I had a lime soda pop, and I'd come out and sit on the bench, and I think that happened in the first inning, and to go in and run for Groat, and so somebody hit a ball in the hole. I ran from first to home, and that lime soda pop almost came up. I mean, that was the first thing. And Murtaugh said, you know, run down the bullpen, get loose, because you're playing short, you're going in. And I was aware that, gosh darn it, you can't screw this up because, I mean, you know, we're in first place and all that. And I just seemed like things kind of went good for me. If I you hit a ball and it would be in the hole, it would be a base hit. And I just got a lot of base hits that meant a lot. And I don't know how to explain it, but it sure was fun. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember when I was a little kid, my Aunt Helen, she bought me my first pack of baseball cards at that time. It was the 61 cards, and your card was right on top. She said, oh, look, there's Dick Schofield. He is fantastic. So I sent you, when I sent you the letter, I had that picture of that card on there, and it was it was a fond memory for me. But hey, you know, I live in upstate New York in a place called Vestal, and it's just outside of Binghamton. If you know where Binghamton is, not far from Elmira. And there's a town here, Endicott, and Johnny Logan was from Endicott. And I know he was on the Pirates for a short time.
Yeah, he's a space cadet.
Yeah,
but he was a good player.
Yes, he was.
He was a good player, but see, he was on that Milwaukee team that was good.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
But he was a good player.
Yeah.
But he was different. He came from outer space too.
Oh, that's funny. So, when you played as the starter, the regular starter, and you were very consistent. You had the year of 63 and 64 were very comparable. I remember once you hit your third home run one year, I think it was in 64, and I was watching the game, and I remember jumping up and on the couch, and just remember jumping up and down. I was so happy.
Like I say, in Pittsburgh, it wasn't going to hit many home runs.
No, it was a tough place. But, boy, you got to play with so many good players at that time. There was, like you said, Willie Stargell was on the club, and Clem Dennin, Bob Bailey, Jerry Lynch.
Yeah,
Michael Rennie.
Yeah, see, I think I played with, somebody wrote an article, I played with more Hall of Fame players than anybody.
I believe it.
See, you go back to the Cardinals, I played with Slaughter, Shane Dees, Musial, Gibson, Brock, Carlton. Let's see. There's somebody else.
Cepeda.
Cepeda. Well, then I went to the Pirates. I played with Clemente and
Stargell. Mass.
Stargell. And then I played with when I went to the Giants. I played with Cepeda, Mays,
Marichal.
Marichal.
Gaylord Perry.
McCovey.
Yeah, McCovey.
Gaylord Perry. And see,
Warren Spahn. Spahn was on that team.
Warren Spahn came to the. He came to the Giants when I was there near the end of the season. That I guess he was, you know, he was about finished up though.
Yeah.
But then I played with Yastrzemski and let's see, there was Bobby Doerr and George Sisler were coaches. And
that was
you got Walter Alston and I don't know. I mean, it's up there to, you know, I can count Carlton and Fisk and sure. Guys. I mean, it's probably 30 guys.
At least. So, you know, Dick, it was really a golden age of baseball, I think. Oh,
well, I think it was really, really the I don't know if, when I say it was the best. I just think it was, I mean, it was, I don't know. Nobody, it wasn't about money, that's for sure. Yeah. You know, I mean, it was, naturally everybody tried to make a little bit more money, but it just seemed like that wasn't the talk. Or, you know, you didn't have agents and you didn't have all this kind of stuff. And I don't know. It just seemed like that the fans were really into the game. I mean, like, They knew more about you than you knew about yourself. You know, I mean, they were really, really interested in the whole situation. You know.
Yeah.
So I think it was, well, I got friends that I have lunch with and stuff, and we just say, you know, I think we might have grew up at a pretty good time.
I think so.
And because when we were kids and up to now, we've been pretty lucky. I mean, there's been some bad things, but basically things have been pretty good.
Well, I'll tell you, you sure were a major part of that for, you know, my growing up and my young years. So it was something that I feel so fortunate now being able to talk to you about your career. This is fantastic.
Well, I mean, I appreciate you talking to me and thinking I'm worthwhile talking to.
Oh, my gosh,
I wanted to be a big league ball player, and I got to be one. And the biggest day of my life is when I went to Chicago and my son ran out of the dugout onto the field. And that was... I never had a feeling like that. Never in my life have I had a feeling like that. So, I mean, it's, I don't know. I guess we like sports. And like I say, my daughter, her son played, and she had one girl go to Nebraska to play volleyball, and she was All-American. And she had another daughter went to UCLA on a track scholarship. And she hurt her leg, unfortunately, and she didn't really get to do what we thought she was going to be able to do. But, I mean, we've been to a lot of different kind of games, track meets and volleyball games and you name it, girls and boys basketball and baseball. So we've covered the gamut of going to games and you know, kind of know what it takes to get it done, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So I still got a few more questions for you. This is great.
I don't care.
Okay. So in '65, you were traded to the Giants, and that was for Jose Pagan, pretty much of an even swap. And he had a pretty good career with the Pirates as a utility person. So tell me about your experience in with the Giants.
Well, with the Giants, if you remember, we had a what was it, like a 7-game lead. I think it was 7-game lead. We figured in conversation, guys were saying, we win 7, lose 7, we'll probably win this thing. Mm-hmm. Well, the Dodgers won 13 in a row, and we finished second.
Yeah,
and that's because we didn't have any pitching. Again, we had Bob Shaw and we had Marichal. Well, Marichal got suspended, if you remember, for hitting Roseboro in the head with the bat.
Right, right.
Well, he missed 8 games, so that's 2 starts.
Sure,
that's almost two sure wins with him pitching. So that killed us. I mean, it killed us, and we just didn't have anybody to pitch. So Gaylord Perry was not a good pitcher then. Mm. I mean, I don't know what his record was that year, but I guarantee you he wasn't counted on very much.
I see.
And that hurt us. I mean, we just didn't have that one more pitcher to win a game for us. So we lost the stupid thing. And the next year, when we started a season, and I did something to my arm. I never had arm problems in my life, never. Well, all of a sudden, I couldn't throw. My arm would swell up, and I couldn't play, and I couldn't play.
That must have been scary. Did you go see the doctor?
Well, in those days, they didn't do all that stuff. They just, I don't know what we did, but so that's when they traded me to the Yankees. And, of course, I knew Ralph Houk, and he told me, he says, can you play? He says, you're going to play shortstop if you can play. And I said, Ralph, I don't know if I can throw. And I went through the season, and it hurt me the whole year. And all of a sudden, I was traded to the Dodgers. I got there one day late to be eligible to play in the World Series. And Baltimore wouldn't allow me to play.
They could have give you a waiver. Is that?
They could have said okay, he can play, but they said no. And so I mean I don't really care if Baltimore ever wins or loses the game. But, I mean I could have, you know, I went there, and the day I got there, I played. Maury Wills was still there. But it was a doubleheader, and I played the second game of the doubleheader at shortstop. And then the next day, I played third base every game from then on out. And I've never been a third baseman.
Your arm must have gotten a lot better if you're playing third base.
Well, yeah, I mean, all of a sudden it seemed like I was okay.
Oh,
I mean,
boy.
You know. I was okay when I was with the Yankees for a while. I mean, but not really at the beginning. So anyhow, I was throwing okay, and I started every game, and we won that thing. In fact, in Philadelphia, we won it in Philadelphia, and we got beat 4-3 the first game by the Phillies, and again, I don't know who pitched, but Jim Bunning pitched the second game against Koufax. And Bunning was going for his 20th win, and Koufax was going for 27.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to win the game to win the pennant. So, I mean, I think I do remember that I got the first hit off Bunning in I don't know, maybe the fourth inning or something like that. Mm-hmm. I got the first hit of the game, and then somebody after me got a base hit, and I think it was Willie Davis hit a three-run homer.
Mm-hmm.
So we're ahead 3-0, and we score a couple more runs, like in the eighth inning. We're ahead 6-0. And it's the ninth inning, and they score 3 runs, the Phillies, off of Koufax. And it seemed like they scored 30, but we ended up winning that game, and you know, going to the World Series.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that must have been Sandy's, probably last game of the season. Then.
That was his last game. Yeah. He pitched in the World Series.
He pitched in the series, yeah. But do you remember him with his arm problems?
Oh yeah, I didn't know anything about him until I got there, and he put that red hot stuff on his arm, and if you took that red hot and just rub it on your arm, I mean, it set you on fire. He'd take a half a tube of that stuff and rub it underneath his armpit and every place else, and his arm would be red, his sweatshirt would be red. Wow. And then he'd go, after 5 innings, he would take that sweatshirt off and rub the rest of the tube of that stuff on his arm and go back out there and just annihilate people. So I guess he knew he had a bad arm, and I've seen him on TV where he said I had to make a decision whether I pitched and would not have use of my arm or quit and have use of my arm.
Yeah.
So he said I made the decision I'm probably gonna live a long time and I wasn't gonna pitch too much longer, but if I did, I guess you must have had something wrong that doctors told him that it would, he was going to lose his arm to a point of being able to even use it. So you have to go along with him on that, I think.
There's no question he made the right choice there.
Yeah.
He was probably one of the more dominating pitchers for about 4 or 5 years maybe.
Mm.
You know, he was control problems before.
But when he was pitching good, he was definitely, I would say, one of the best ever for about 5 years. He just beat you. That's all.
Boy, yeah.
You couldn't hit him.
Yeah. So with the Dodgers, you missed out on the World Series, and then you were with them.
I was there.
1967.
I was there the next year, and then before I went home that year, Buzzy Pavese, he said, I tell you what, we want you back here next year, but I'm not going to put you on the 40-man roster. I'm going to try to protect some young guys. So now if anybody contacts you or if you want to contact anybody, that's up to you. But you can come back here. So I get home and it was, I don't know when it was, but got a phone call one day and it was Stan Musial. And he said, would you like to come back to the Cardinals? Well,
Stan was general manager.
And see, I'm only 95 miles from St. Louis and my kids are getting a little bit older. I said, well, sure, I'd really like to do that.
Yeah.
And so, naturally, well, I go back there. We win the pennant, and go to the World Series and everything. And after that, we went to Japan that fall, and so I was with the Cardinals, and there again, let's see, after that season. If I remember right, they had the expansion, and guys went all over, and they traded me to the Red Sox, and the Red Sox, I don't know who, I couldn't tell you who they got. Oh, they got the pitcher named Wasilewski.
Gary Wasilewski.
He pitched real good against them in the World Series. So they figured they was getting a pitcher that maybe nobody thought was that good. And so I went to the Red Sox, and I wanted to sign with the Red Sox because the Red Sox were always my favorite team.
Is that right?
Ever since I was a little kid.
No kidding.
I loved Ted Williams, and I pulled for the Red Sox, and who knows why? I mean, except that's who I loved them, and I said I wanted. So I'm really happy to be with the Red Sox.
I was going to ask you if you were a St. Louis Browns or Cardinals fan.
No. I was a Red Sox fan all the way.
Wow. So you were going to your favorite team.
Yeah, and so Dick Williams was the manager, mm-hmm. and Dick Williams, I'd never had a manager that used me more the right way than anybody I ever had. I mean, he just used me just perfect, and I did really good for him and everything.
You did fantastic. I remember how you filled in at second base, at short, at third. I mean, you were
I played second base a lot. I mean,
Mike Andrews, I think. Yeah,
Mike was hurt, and anyhow, I just I love the Red Sox, and the next year, I mean, Eddie Casco came. Mm-hmm. And they fired Williams. The next year,
Why did they fire Williams? He seemed like he did such a good job in all the clubs he was at, but he didn't seem to.
I don't know why they fired him.
I mean, every place he went, he wouldn't last long.
Yeah, he was. I don't know. He was kind of sarcastic at times. I mean, maybe he hurt himself a little bit. I don't know for sure. But man, he just used me. I mean, I knew exactly when I was going to pinch hit. I knew I was ready. I'd had my bat, and I'd be ready to go hit, and he would just look down and says, go get him, and I just knew that. He was going to use me in the eighth and ninth inning, and I think I hit .333 as a pinch hitter that year. Plus, I mean, you know, I played a lot and everything. So anyhow, the next year, Casco, he came there, and I knew Eddie. Eddie came, and his wife came to my house for about 10 days after the season one year. His wife and my wife were friends and that, and we... He acted like he never knew me. Oh. I started the season out in New York. I pinch hit opening day, hit a little ground ball back to the pitcher. The next four times up, I got base hits. I was 4-for-5 pinch hitting. And all of a sudden, it would be the third or fourth inning, and he'd say, "Hey, get a bat. You're going to hit for the pitcher," and I'm thinking to myself, it's the third inning. I can't get now. I'm done. I can't get in the game.
Yeah.
Before when I eighth or ninth inning, I'd pinch hit, and a lot of times I'd go in the game, and you know, where I'd get maybe another at bat. Who knew?
Sure.
Well, I guess you shouldn't blame somebody, but I had a bad year. I had. Everything that happened was just ass backwards.
And you had such a great year the year before.
I love Boston. Mm-hmm. It was a great place to play, and he did the same thing to Don Pavletic, and he played with Don at Cincinnati. He just acted like he was afraid to talk to us, like somebody's going to think that we're, were his favorites or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking, this is Mickey Mouse stuff.
Boy,
and,
what a shame.
Yeah, so I just really, I had a bad year because I was just screwed up. I mean, I think. Of course, I was getting older. I mean, I realized I was getting older. And then... When did you start
feeling that, that the age had, you couldn't run as fast? Because I know you were a pretty fast runner there at one time. And
I went back to the Cardinals. And in fact, I mean, you remember things. We just came off a road trip where I'd played about 10 days in a row or something like that. Because Maxwell got hurt, mm-hmm. and I played, and I was getting—I mean, I was getting really good. And everything. Come back off the road trip, and he just took me out of the lineup. And I'm thinking, gee whiz.
That was Red Shandy's.
Yeah, it was Shandy's. But I mean, I thought, I think I should play a couple more days because I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, so they. We started the season off really good, and then when June hit, we lost every day, I think.
Huh.
So it was just before trade deadline. We played a doubleheader in St. Louis, and they called me in the office, and they said we're gonna release you. And I said, well, why in the hell did you get me back here if you was going to release me and screw me all up? I said, there was teams I wasn't going to be released. This now, what am I supposed to do? Well, he said, we'll give you an option. And he said, I can pay you right now and you can go home for the rest of the year. We'll send you to Tulsa as a coach, and I'll get you back to the big leagues as soon as I can. Or you can become head baseball coach at the University of Jacksonville. And I thought, I don't want to just pick up my family and go to I don't even know where University of Jacksonville is unless it's in Jacksonville, Florida.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, I'll tell you what. I said, I'm going to be a coach if I go to Tulsa. I said, yep, you'd be a coach. And as soon as I'll make a deal as soon as I can. I'm trying to make some deals. I'll get you back to the big leagues. So I go to Tulsa, and Warren Spahn's the manager.
Yeah.
And I hadn't touched the ball for a week. And I drive all the way from Springfield to Tulsa. I get the ballpark about 6 o'clock at night. I walk in the clubhouse and hey, he said, you're playing shortstop. I said, no, I'm a coach. He said, and he had these young guys down there. And he put me in the lineup. I couldn't get out of the lineup for Christ's sake. I kept playing and kept playing and kept playing. Finally, they made a trade with Milwaukee, and that's how I got to Milwaukee. And the same thing happened to me at Milwaukee. After the season, they told me, okay.
Who was the manager of Milwaukee that last year?
Dave Bristol.
Oh, Dave Bristol, that's right, yeah.
And Frank Lane was the general manager.
No, Trader Lane, yeah.
So they called me. I went, last day of the season, they took me down the right field line. Said, okay, we'll give you some options. You can come back here next year as a player because Bristol said he wants you back on the team. I said, well, that's what I, why would I want something else? I said, well, you can be the manager of San Antonio in the Texas League. And I said, well, I don't know. I said, I'll take my chances, and I can always manage. I mean, if somebody gives me a chance, I can manage. I think I'll go to, I'll, if he wants me on the team, I'll go for that. So I go to spring training, and that's when they had the strike. You know, the season didn't start.
It was 12 games or something. Yeah,
it was quite a while. But they, you know, in spring training, Gristle called me in his office and he said, "I think you're in trouble." And I said, "What do you mean? What do I do?" And he said, "Well, there's going to be a strike." And he said, you're going to get released." And that's what they released me. And I couldn't do nothing because everybody was, they didn't know how long it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Or what they was going to do with players.
So it was just bad timing.
So I hung around there until the season started and nothing happened. And I called, I don't know. I bet you I called 10 clubs and they all said the exact same thing. "We don't know how long this strike's going to go. And we can't make any, whether we want you or don't want you, we can't really make any commitment." So I said, "Well, I'm going home." So I went home and I stayed there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you had done so much traveling. It was probably, a good thing in a way that you were with your family, so much. I know that, how dedicated you were to your family.